Let's take a look at this map. According to a Microsoft report, Singapore has the second highest AI adoption rate in the world. For example, over 60% of the population has used some type of generative AI tool in the past year. Minister, almost 61%, as a matter of fact. Are you happy with this? Does the government have an aim?
I think it's a really good starting point, and it's nice to know that, you know, we're one of the most AI-enabled in the world. But given the rate and the speed at which AI is developing, I don't think we can afford to rest on our laurels. And our sense is that the AI adoption is uneven. There's some who adopt a lot, do it very well, and there are also segments, in fact, in some cases, depends on the sector, some areas where people don't adopt it, not familiar with it. So I think what we are aiming for is where all businesses, all Singaporeans and people here are able to use it effectively, comfortably, and feel secure in using it. Because, you know, it's every time you learn something new, you don't really know what to do, how to approach it, etc. We want people to be able to come on board with confidence. So I would say it's a good start, but it's only the beginning of a journey.
So that's really interesting, to feel secure using it. That's a new takeaway for me. Now, before the break, I mentioned that we took a poll of our viewers on social media, asking them what was the first word that came to mind when they hear AI. So let's take a look again at the results. The three most popular words are productivity, efficiency and overhyped. So overhyped, Minister, you were smiling when I said that earlier on. Why?
Okay, because I think that that response is both right and not quite so right. Overhyped in the sense that, yes, everybody is talking about it. Everybody is, it's on everybody's minds, especially because it's been a feature of the budget. But it's not wrong to say that in some cases, you must be careful not to overhype it, because AI cannot do everything. It's not going to be the be-all and the end-all. If you think about it, back in the 90s, right, before the year 2000, everything was .com. Everything was, you know, we would have digital sales and there would be no brick and mortar. But today, we buy online, but there is still brick and mortar, and they have adjusted. And over the years, with every new technology in the 2010s, it was everything was about some kind of tech or digital. And it was a bit uncomfortable for people at the beginning, but we got on board, and during the COVID period, you know, everybody got online. We were using Zoom and other things. So we got comfortable over time. It's the same thing with AI. Everybody's talking about it now. It's a fast-developing area, but we shouldn't imagine that it will do everything for us. But at the same time, it is not overhyped in this sense, meaning that we may not appreciate the speed at which AI is going to change things. And therefore, we must not underestimate, or rather, we should make sure that we are ready for it. Because if the changes come too fast and we're not ready, then we might find jobs affected, might find ourselves left out of things, not able to catch up. So the key thing about AI is we should enable people to adopt, enable businesses to get on board, and try to be able to do it in a way that it just becomes part and parcel of the way we work, the way we live, so that we don't, you know, get overwhelmed by it.
Yep. It is also true that AI is often seen by many as a double-edged sword. It can lead to productivity, automation and advancement, but it can also lead to job displacement.
In fact, according to a recent survey, 58% of Singapore workers worry that AI will replace them in the next 2 years. Now, I want to come to you, Naresh, because you are a software engineer, you code AI products, and actually you have a bit of that fear, right?
Yes, I do. Hi, Minister.
Hi.
I've been a software engineer for about 5 years, and I have literally seen my productivity increase tenfold over the last year as I slowly integrate AI into my workflows. However, on the flip side, I do share a sentiment with a lot of what those people shared. I do see companies will be more and more reluctant to hire, as one person can do more and more. how does the this AI productivity boost translate to better job security and wages? Thank you.
That's a really good question. And, you know, you have a unique perspective because you're actually seeing it happen live in front of you. That's our big question also. So our starting point is this. You can't roll back AI, right? It's going to come. And yes, there will be jobs where AI will take away more of the function so that a company that was employing, let's say, 20 people or 200 people may now need only half of that. But AI should also be leveraged on and can be leveraged on to create new jobs. So let's say you may lose, you know, your place in a company, but the question is, can you then move to another company if you want to stay employed and do something different using AI? Or the other is, can you start your own business using AI? There's a whole range of possibilities out there. So our strategy for something like AI, which is going to come and you can't stop that part of it, is to try and figure out how do we ensure that we, A, keep up, and B, can actually leverage on it to go further. And the answer is, as this budget attempts to do, is one, anchor AI R&D here, steer a national strategy, enable our businesses, equip our people, so that even if, you know, your task is now being done by AI, can you in the same company go to a higher value add function? That's one. Or if you cannot stay with the company, can you retrain and go into another company which needs your skill sets, augmented with AI in a different way, or do something on your own? And that is why SkillsFuture also puts quite a bit of emphasis on this.
There's always a lot of concern. In fact, my job one day could be replaced by AI as well. And that's why I want to come to you, Ramus, because you are an AI filmmaker, right? Very quickly, tell us, what is that? What do you do?
I use AI workflows to produce TV and films in Southeast Asia. So with our workflows, we've done a TV episode in Indonesia. I'm working on two dramas in Singapore and more micro-dramas coming up. Right now, I was supposed to go to the US like 2 years ago, actually, for work. But when I saw the first AI ad come out, it was called Sora, I had a time froze. I saw it and I realized, everything about how I know work is going to change. And I'm very glad that I made a decision to not go to the US, but to drill this problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a way, you pivoted. He saw that he was a production assistant, wanted to work in the media, realized, wow, AI is going to do all this. I better change, you know.
But so, you still need to work with people, right? Fewer, maybe, but still.
Honestly, I work with like 20 times less people now. Yes. So I'm a bit worried.
But not zero, lah.
Not zero.
Yes. And so the others may have to pivot to other things in a similar fashion.
Yeah, they do, and they have.
Okay.
But are we seeing that increasingly becoming the way where, you know, where we needed numbers in the past, now we don't?
I think that will become the new norm. But it doesn't necessarily have to translate to no jobs. That's the point. And if everybody is able to access AI in some way, shape or form, then the question is whether you can have a new job, create your own job, or do something different, but still, you know, have a good living for yourself.
Well, Ramus, I'm really happy that we managed to keep you here in Singapore with us. Okay. Now, Minister, my next question actually sort of relates to both Steve and myself because we have children who will soon join the workforce. Now, according to one report, 4 in 5 Singapore employers have reduced the number of entry-level hires at their companies due to AI. Steve?
Ben, in fact, you are one of those. You're only 21 years old. You are a final university student. But you've already launched 2 AI startups, right, Ben? Sorry, you're all the way over here. Go for it, Ben.
Hi. Yes. Hi, Minister. So to that point, a lot of entry-level positions are now being exposed to automation. And it might not fully replace it, but it really changes the job scope.
Yes.
So how can university students or how can students in general prepare themselves for an AI-first environment? Thank you.
I think apart from the course of study that you have, it's also to keep an eye on where the developments are and try to position yourself for that. That's one. But two, remember that AI is not an industry in itself. We have many other growth sectors. So think about it. We've announced the creation of a space agency that will be dealing with satellites. That's definitely going to be AI-enabled or empowered, but they're going to need young people, for sure. Then we have an aged society. We're going to need a lot more healthcare workers and people who are in the senior care space. But the senior care space, there's room for both automation, robotics, as well as AI. For example, can seniors live in smart apartments that can sense when there's a fall, that can analyze, you know, if a senior has not been seen for a certain time, etc. There will be the systems, things that you can develop to make life easier for seniors. I think now they're using those, what do you call those frames where they can walk? Is that like an exoskeleton?
Yes, I've seen the videos.
Yeah, and some of that will be AI-enabled. Those kinds of jobs where you basically work on developing the AI, that's going to explode with an AI-enabled society. And you will still also not do away with all the other types of jobs, F&B and so on, that will still be necessary, but maybe done in a different way.
Okay, I'm going to come over to Ray Yi. You are a medical student. You've got a question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Minister. You earlier mentioned about the human aspect of AI. I'm concerned that as a medical student and a future doctor, in the future, will I just be asked to interpret AI results and then consult the patient based on that? How does the government intend to ensure the human touch is retained within medicine as well as nursing?
The thing about the professions, of which medical is one, you've also got lawyers, accountants, built environment. The whole point about being a professional is that you develop a very deep expertise. And things like AI, digital, and all the rest of it are tools. So I think that AI and tech will make the job of the doctors easier in terms of the diagnosis, in terms of the precision, because nowadays they can be so precise, right, in being able to find the place where you're supposed to cut out something or insert something. But the interpretation of it and the knowledge of the patient is still very important because no two individuals are alike. Some patients present differently and they also respond differently. So it will always be a question of using the science but having that human judgment. So doctors are definitely not an endangered species. It's just a question of how you use the tech and the AI to help you do your jobs better.
Okay, Ray, I would definitely still want to talk to my doctor. So don't
worry, okay? For sure.